And today is taken out of the book called Nehemiah. And Nehemiah was the son of Hakaliah. He was born in Babylon during the time of the captivity. This man, he was not a prophet and he was not a priest, but he was a historian. The book bears his name, and it gives us a history of what that he did for the church at that particular time. This man, Nehemiah, he was then a person that was raised up by God for a special work. He wrote this book, and it consists of about 36 years of history of the Jews. In his time, Malachi, the last prophet in the Old Testament, lived and flourished. And the commentary says that this book concludes the history of the Jewish people under the Old Testament. He was then a son of Hakaliah, and it was in the 20th year of Artaxerxes and the month Kislew that he was in Shushan the palace. This Kislew is the ninth month of the sacred year of the Jews, the third month of their civil year. They have two calendars. Their sacred calendar consists of all their feast days, and they observe these very faithfully. The third year of their civil calendar means that they took care of all their civil affairs throughout the year that was on this calendar. They were in Shushan, the palace that this man Nehemiah dwelt. Shushan was a city on the river Ulai in Persia. Quite a large city, was 13 miles in circumference. It was built by Cyrus. He was the first king that made it his winter quarters. They resorted to this particular place because it was shielded by several large mountains from the northeast wind. All the kings after Cyrus went there during the winter. In the summer, it was so exceedingly hot that it was not even fit to dwell there. It was in Shushan that Daniel had the vision of the ram and of the lion. Likewise, this city is no more in existence. It is nothing else but ruins. There are nothing else but mounds. Great high hills. They are made of various metals and likewise of bricks and of marble, consisting of the ruins of this city. They are pyramids. Some are 100 feet in circumference, some 200 feet. At the foot of one of these pyramids, they found the tomb of Daniel, where he was buried. This then was the palace and the residence of this king, Artaxerxes. Nehemiah, he was in this palace at this present time. This man received some visitors from Jerusalem, a friend of his by the name of Hanani, and several others of Judah came at this present time to him. And he inquired of them of the state and condition of the Jewish people that were in Jerusalem. This man, he dwelt in this court, in this palace. He had a very good position. And whether he ever had been to Jerusalem is unknown, being he was born in this city of Babylon. But he inquired about the Jewish people from his friend. According to the Bible, this man, Hanani, was a child of God. And he told him that the remnant that were in the provinces and that were of the captivity were in great affliction and distress and reproach. The walls of Jerusalem were broken down into ruins, and the gates thereof had been burned with fire. But when he heard this, Nehemiah, it affected him very greatly. It touched his heart to hear that his brethren, his people, were in such a condition. That it brought him down in prayer, in fasting, in supplicating to God. It affected him so that he had such a desire in his heart to help these people if he possibly could. But what can one man do? Therefore, he resorted to God in prayer. This teaches us that Nehemiah also was a child of God, for we find him in a praying attitude. God has his people all over. It is true, Paul says, God has chosen the foolish to confound the wise, and he has chosen the poor likewise to confound the rich. But God likewise has chosen many men, gifted men, rich men, and he has used them for special things in order that his church would prosper. Therefore, this man, Nehemiah, was likewise raised up at this time by God for this particular work. We find him then praying. He just didn't pray once, but he prayed many days. In the next verse, he said that he was praying day and night. And we find his prayer recorded in this first chapter. He addresses the Lord God of heaven as that great and terrible God who keepeth covenant unto those that love him and obey his commandments. And he goes on to pray that God would be attentive, and let thine ear be attentive and thine eye open unto the prayer that thy servant prayeth unto thee day and night. Where I confess the sins of the children of Israel and my own sins and the sins of my fathers. We find in this man praying unto that great and terrible God. My hearers, have you ever had a feeling sense of the greatness and of the terribleness of this God who we worship? Oh, we come so many times to him. We have no thought, no realization of his greatness. Oh, he is great in majesty. He is great in glory, in honor. He is great in his dealings with the children of men. He is great in mercy and pity and in compassion, but he is also terrible in his dealings. Oh, how many terrible things have taken place in this world by this great and terrible God. Oh, if you have ever been brought by the grace of God to his footstool, and you have been given to see something of his greatness, of his terribleness, and then you have been filled with fear, you have been filled with awe. But then you have wondered and marveled that he has not consumed you in your sins and in your iniquities. This man Nehemiah had such a sight of this God. Have you ever had such a sight of him? Oh, I know. When we get such a sight of him, in his greatness and in his terribleness, we fear. We tremble that he will consume us in his wrath. But have you ever come to him, to this great and to this terrible God, with a crumb of faith in your heart, believing that his ear was open unto you, and that he listened to your prayer, that his eye was upon you, and that this greatness and that this terribleness was on your side, that it was all in your favor, that this God was your friend. Oh, what a blessing it is to come to God in this way. Oh, to come to him as Nehemiah. He claimed himself to be a servant of this great God. Let thine ear be attentive unto the prayer of thy servant. I think some that are listening to me would say, oh, I would give everything I have if I could come to him in faith and say, Lord, listen to the prayer of thy child, of thy servant that is bowed down here before thee. Oh, how seldom do we come in faith. How seldom do we come believing that his ear is open and his eye is upon us. But when we believe that he loves us and we obey his commandments, then we think his ear is open and his eye is upon us. But when we sin and do evil in his sight, oh my hearers, we as children of God, we do not sin willfully. We sin in weakness. Oh, we sin, I've often said, with a prayer in our heart that God would keep us from the sin, and while we're praying, we fall headlong into it. Have you ever done that? And when we do this, we think that God would never listen to us anymore. But this God who has planted the ear, shall he not hear? And he that has put the eye in each and every one of our heads, shall he not see? All my hearers, his ear is open unto the cries of his dear children. All they find that irrespective of all their sins, he comes and encourages them to seek him, to persevere in it, and gives them at times such encouragement to believe that they will receive in due time the forgiveness of all their sins, and that they will have joy and peace in believing. Oh, seeking soul that is so troubled, whether God is listening, whether his ear is open, or you may be sure that he is listening, and that he will in due time grant you the desires of your heart. And Nehemiah, he had such a sight of this great and this terrible God, but he still desired that his ear would be open and his eye would be upon him, and that he would be attentive to the prayer that he was praying day and night. Have you ever prayed day and night? Oh, my hearers, have you ever had a case that was so urgent that nobody else could help you with, that you were praying day and night? Oh, what a mercy, my hearers, if you may come under that word of the apostle, where he speaks of the elect crying unto him day and night. Have you ever come under it? Have you ever been given to believe that you were one of them? Oh, surely God knows whether you are praying to him day and night at times. There have been times in your life, maybe, that you were in a position that you needed him to help. There was nobody else that could help. You couldn't sleep. You stay awake crying that God would hear, that God would answer. And lo and behold, he did, to the joy and to the happiness of your heart. Nehemiah was a praying man and in this respect. And he prayed that likewise that God would fulfill a promise that he had given unto Moses. He reminded God of the word that he had spoken by the mouth of Moses, where he had said, if thou dost transgress against me, I will scatter thee amongst the nations. But if thou dost obey me and return unto me, no matter where thou may beest under the heavens, then I will bring thee back to this place where I have set my name. Oh, he reminded then God of his promise concerning these Jewish people that were in distress. It was in and through sin that these people likewise had been scattered among the nations. They likewise had been in Babylon 70 years because of their iniquities. But now they had been given by the goodness of God to return to Jerusalem. They had builded the temple, they had set up the worship of God, and they were seeking his favor, seeking his help again. And all they desired is that God likewise would be their God and manifest himself unto them in this place in Jerusalem. And this man, he was praying likewise to God, reminding him thereof. Oh, this God is a God of promises, my hearers. Has he ever given you a promise? Has he ever sealed home something to your heart and led you to seek him and to pray concerning what he has spoken to you? Oh, what a mercy if you have a promise. Popham says in one of his sermons, if you have a promise of God, you have more riches than all the gold and bullion that is in the Bank of England, because you have God and his word on your side. And this man pleaded upon this promise. And have you ever pleaded before God upon something that he has given you, my hearers? Oh, he's a faithful God. He keeps his word unto 1,000 generations. He never goes back on his word. And regardless of how far you may go from God, just as well as these Israelites did, and they were carried away into Babylon, he never forgot them. He was a covenant God. They were his people. He had entered into a covenant with them, and he remembered them. He never left them nor forsook them, but he was mindful of his covenant. He had promised them even while they were in Babylon that he would bring them back to this city, and that he would be a wall of fire round about them, and that he would be their protector and keep them in this city that they were rebuilding. This man, Nehemiah, pleaded then on the promise of God that he would likewise remember his people, his servants, that were in this state and in this condition. Oh, my hearers, can you claim yourself one of his people, one of his servants, as he did speak of the Israelites that were back in Jerusalem? Oh, if you could by faith believe, you say, that I was one of his people, one of his servants. Oh, how rich I would feel myself to be. Oh, Nehemiah, he believed that of these people back in Jerusalem. And now he spake unto God in prayer and asked God again that he would be attentive unto his prayer and unto the prayers of his servants that had a desire to hear his name. Oh, may you not come in on this. Are there not some amongst me that have a desire to fear God? Oh, that love him, that wish that they could live for him, and that they could be obedient unto him. Oh, they have such longings and such desires that they would be holy, that they would be free from sin. Does not God know this? Does he not look into your hearts? Does he not know the desires that you send up unto him? Verily so, my hearers. Or he will in due time grant unto you your desire, for he fulfills the desire of every living thing. This man, Nehemiah, he concluded his prayer by reminding God of being in covenant with these people, and that he would likewise grant unto him favor in the sight of this man, the king, for he was the king's cupbearer. This man, Nehemiah, felt himself to be so insignificant in the sight of this great king. And he desired that God would work in the heart of this king, that he would find favor in his sight. He desired that God would grant unto him the desire that he was sending up to God, and that this king would be the instrument in God's hand of giving him what he had in his heart to do. He desired then to find favor in the sight of this great king, for he was the king's cupbearer. Oh, are there any here who in a spiritual sense desire to find favor in the sight of that great king, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords? Oh, how many listening to me have such a desire? Have you no desire to be found in his presence? No desire to find grace in his sight, to find mercy, to find pardon, to find peace, without a living desire? Oh, my hearers, we cannot place these desires in our own hearts. God must grant them unto us. Just like Nehemiah, he was concerned about these people back in Jerusalem. It was a burden upon his heart. God had placed that there. He, like us, would have been indifferent about it had not God made it a burden to him. And now when Nehemiah was so burdened and so concerned about these people in Jerusalem, we likewise, like Nehemiah, have great reason to weep and to mourn and to pray concerning the state and condition of Jerusalem in the time in which we live. I mean his church, his Zion, and what an awful state it is in, my hearers. Has it ever struck you? Has it ever brought you down in secret, weeping and mourning, that God's church is in such a lamentable state? My hearers, it was laid upon the heart of Nehemiah. I'm afraid there are very few that are burdened with this condition of Zion. It is that we are so indifferent concerning it. I know we cannot be burdened unless God lays it upon us, that we go on in our indifference. But this is another burden, that there is so much indifference concerning the state and condition of God's church. Oh, what an awful state. Do you not think it's in an awful state where the Spirit of God is so departed, where we see no administration of the Spirit with the preaching, with the reading, no conversions taking place, no souls being brought into liberty? Oh, how few enjoy something of communion and fellowship with God in the times in which we live. It's so rare, my hearers. Oh, we are like the city of Jerusalem. It was lying waste. It was in ruins. They had no means of defense. The walls were all down, and the enemies, they reproached them and they afflicted them. And so it is with you and I, as we belong to this church. Inwardly, in our heart, this place, this Jerusalem, is like that city. The enemy comes in and prevails over us. Sin, the world, the devil, they seem to have the upper hand over God's dear children. They sit in darkness and have no light. They have no fellowship, no communion with God. And they sit and mourn sore because they are in this state and condition. Oh, what a lamentable state by church in. Oh, that God would raise up a Nehemiah, that God would lay this burden upon your soul and upon my soul, and that we may go to him day and night and say, arise, O Lord our God, arise over thy church and reveal thy power, thy glory, thy majesty again in thy sanctuary. For this man, he desired to find favor in the sight of God, and if that is your wish and your desire, then there may be that God will arise over you and will grant unto you likewise to experience his love, his mercy, his pity toward you. And this man, he was the king's cupbearer, an honorable position in the Persian realm. And this man, he took care of administering the wine unto the king. He carried a cup of wine to the king. Before he gave the wine to the king, he poured out some in his own hand, and he drunk it out of his hand in the front of the king, so that the king was certain that there was no poison in that wine. Because that's what they tried to do many times with kings and rulers of countries. This was then an honorable position. This typifies the ministers of the gospel, my hearers, a very honorable position to be a king's cupbearer, or to carry the gospel throughout the world, to preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. What an honorable position to have in the church of God. Oh, that God would raise up such Nehemiahs in our time and give us such cupbearers. He was to drink first to make sure that there was no poison in the wine. And every God-sent cupbearer, he comes in purity, with doctrine, with experience. He comes not with poison, but he comes with the truth, my hearers, because he has first himself experienced it, has enjoyed it. He has received Christ Jesus in his own heart and has been taught the way of salvation as it is in him. And with this experience, he may come before the congregation and speak in his name. Oh, what a mercy to have such a cupbearer. May God raise up many young men out of our midst, some that are now listening to me, that he may make them cupbearers to bring forth the gospel of the pure, the unadulterated truth before the world as it is in this our time. He was then the king's cupbearer. And we find that in the next chapter of this man, he was before the king as he had often been. And there was wine before the king, and he had to pour out this wine unto him. And he had never been before sad in his presence. But this time when he poured the wine before the king, he looked very sad. He was a man probably of a pleasant features. The king loved to see him around him. He enjoyed looking upon his face. But at this time, he looked so sad. And the king, he noticed that he was not sick. And therefore, when he saw him in this condition, he said unto him, "Why art thou sad this day? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart." And this king, he noticed this on this Nehemiah, because he had never been that way before. And Nehemiah, when he heard the king speak to him in this way, then he became very afraid. My hearers, there lies a spiritual experience here. This man, he looks sad. There are many of you that are listening to me that have had times in your life when you look sad. Maybe you still look sad. Maybe still something is troubling you. There have been times when sickness entered into your family. Your father, your mother got sick. Maybe they were taken away by the hand of death. Oh, everybody in the family suffers then. It's to be seen on everybody's features that something took place in that family. It may be that you lost a child. You lost a sister, a brother, someone near and dear and precious to you. And all when such things take place in life, my hearers, then we walk with a very long face. We are very sad. We are in grief and sorrow. And it is a good thing to be in that state, my hearers. The Bible teaches us it's better to go into the house of mourning than into the house of feasting. And oh, how many have lost in their lives. They've lost homes. They've lost wealth that they had during the Depression. Everything is went. Or they've lost maybe an arm, a leg. Some are poor cripples. They have to go through life the rest of their days this way. And all these things make people sad. But this isn't unusual. This is natural. Well, this man, he had something that was troubling him here inside. And now this takes place too, my hearers, when God comes with his Holy Spirit into a sinner's soul and convicts that sinner of sin, of righteousness, and of judgment. He may have been a merry fellow. He may have been one of the brightest guys that you ever went with. You like to be in his company. Oh, he was a happy-go-lucky sort of a fellow. But now he looks so glum. He doesn't talk. He's looking so sad because he has sinned against God. Oh, my hearers, have you ever felt that? Has it ever brought you in secret on your knees? Or has it ever made you cry out, "Oh, God, what a creature am I? Oh, why did you ever create me? Why did you ever bring me into this world? What have I done against thee all the days of my life?" All the sorrow, the grief that a person has when sin becomes sin, when it's a reality. Oh, then that poor creature, oh, he walks over the streets and he does his work. He has such a sad face. Before he was all smiles, he was full of jokes. But now, and I say this, and this is the truth, and some of God's people will say that's true too, I had a time in my life I thought I never would laugh, I never would smile anymore. You ever have that? All the seriousness of life, all the things of eternity weighing upon your heart, the reality of them. Oh, my hearers, you don't laugh then. You don't have no smiling face then. You look very sad, very glum. People may say, "What's the matter with you? Why do you look that way?" That's what this king said to Nehemiah. "How come that you look this way, that you were sad?" So God comes sometimes to one of those poor, sad-looking creatures and says, "Why do you look so sad?" This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. He knows this because he has begun this and he has done this in you. And he will continue to do this, my hearers. And now we find that the king, sitting on his throne with the queen alongside of him, and we find Nehemiah giving up boldness to speak. And when he made this statement to Nehemiah, and then Nehemiah, and he was full of fear. So have you and I been. Fear that we would be lost, fear that we would be cast away. And this man, he probably feared too. Maybe I'll lose my position. Maybe he'll chase me away from him. Maybe he won't have anything to do with me. Oh, this Nehemiah, and he was afraid. And then he began to speak and said, "Why should I not look sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth in ruins?" This was the reason why that he was sad. And then the king spake unto him and said unto him, "What is thy request?" And when he said, "What is thy request?" we read so distinctly, "And I made my prayer unto the God of heaven." Take notice, my hearers. He didn't go alone. He didn't go on his knees somewhere, as he had been praying day and night before already. But now he was before the king. And now the king says, "What is thy request?" And he made his prayer unto the God of heaven. A short prayer, a heartfelt prayer, a prayer that came out of the bosom of his soul in great need to God. What do you think he prayed for? It doesn't say in the Bible what he prayed for. But I do think that he prayed and said, "Lord, do give me a mouth, and do give me wisdom to speak unto this king, and all incline his heart, that he likewise may grant me the desires of my heart." My hearers, you know, these prayers are sometimes the sweetest, and they're the most truest prayers, I would say, that come up sometimes when we are in great need, when we don't have any time to go alone, when we don't have any time to make up any rules, but there we stand, and we need God, and nobody knows this but God himself, and we send up a prayer, it shoots up to heaven. Oh, have you ever been in a position like that? Have you ever sent up prayers like that, short prayers? Oh, they were just sighs, they were just cries. Oh, my hearers, and this Nehemiah, he prayed, and God heard his prayer. God answered his prayer likewise. Maybe you say, well, I prayed so many times, but I don't get any answers. It doesn't seem as if God listens to my prayers. It seems that his ear is stopped and that he will not hear. Oh, I'm such a sinner, he's just, that he never listens to me. And my hearers, do you think Nehemiah was any better than you? By no means. He was a man of like passions as you and I. He was a sinner too. But he was indicted by the Spirit of God to send up this prayer right in the presence of the king. And God gave him favor in the sight of this king. And the king asked him what he desired, and he made his request known. My hearers, he received what he had in his heart to do. He received permission from this king to go back to Jerusalem. He received likewise enough help, guards to carry him over the rivers, and he got letters to take to the rulers of the various countries that were round about him. And this man was given then such an answer to his prayers. And now, my hearers, this great king in heaven bowed. He is similar to this king. When you come in such a way as Nehemiah, then he sees you. And he says unto you, what is your request? Have you any request? You that are listening to me, have you any request to make to that king in heaven? You know, God's people have so many requests. Sometimes they're so lively. Sometimes they're in faith. Sometimes they can't leave God alone. Sometimes they wrestle with him. I will not leave thee go, except thou bless me. Have you ever had it? Wrestling prayer can wonders do. He speaks and he says, now, what is your request? Make it known unto me. Have you ever made it known to him? Have you ever come like a little child and said, Lord, this is my request. Oh, save me. Oh, deliver me from my sins. Oh, do give me to believe in Jesus, thy dear son. Oh, do give me the pardon of my sins. Peace with thee. Are these requests unknown to you? Have you no requests to make to this great king in heaven above? He knows every one of your requests, my hearers, and he invites you to come. Oh, yes. And he is more willing and ready to give than even King Ahasuerus was. Yes, he is. Oh, he has a heart of gold. But he has a time and a place when he does grant your request. And his time is the best time. Oh, may you be given to be violent at the throne of grace, not to leave him alone, but to continue to persevere with your request at his footstool. And you will find that there will be a time coming that he will grant unto you more than you were even able to ask or think of. The God of heaven and earth, bless the feeble instruction given out of his word this afternoon to your immortal souls. That's all for today.